So what's on your mind this new September day? Believe how fast this is going? It's crazy.
Crazy. It's really flying by, that's for sure. We're finally going back into the office next week. So,
oh, wow.
6 months.
Oh, that's great.
They're going to do a rotating schedule, and we'll be in there only 2 days a week, but at least it's the start of things opening back up for us, at least.
Terrific. Okay. questions on week 7? Anything you're stuck on?
Not so much.
I can't say necessarily.
Go ahead, Tyler.
No, after you, Seth.
I was just going to say, not so much stuck on anything we're working on, but I'm usually good with homework, and I'm the first to admit I'm way behind the target of how many clients I've already got on the cycle and the schedule and some of these conversations. To Tyler's point, I'm hoping to be a little more efficient next week once I can get back into the office, directly work with Miranda a little bit better. But I just wanted to let you know that, Rob, and I didn't know if,
sure,
you know, if that means, okay, well, maybe we take a couple weeks off so you can play catch up. I just don't want to, like, you know, slow down our progress with you, but I'm definitely behind turning this battleship.
Well, it's a good question. We have Labor Day, which will give us a break. And I'm not sure how that affects you guys on Wednesday. Do we skip a week or not? I haven't looked.
I think on the schedule, we are scheduled to be together next week.
And next week's, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's a group with some of those other teams. So I don't know.
Yeah, we can't skip that then.
Okay. All right. So that answers that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, I mean, I'm fine continuing the trajectory we're on. I'm just, you know, behind the scenes, I'm, you know,
paddling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard. Okay. I, it's not a crisis because, we don't, as long as we don't have an issue with the process.
Yeah, no, I like the process. You know, I've told my partners, I mean, accountability and a routine. I mean, I'm beyond excited the direction we're going. It's just, you know, between taking care of the clients and everything I've got going on, I'm definitely just a little behind on the transition. So, yeah, as long as you're okay with that. And I guess, you know, the things are starting to open up here a little bit more for, you know, if I'm going to be the marketer and the lead VP on the marketing, you know, I'm you know, basically I think I've got meetings all set up all next week. Like, I feel like after Labor Day, the COIs and everything I'm going to be more accountable for are going to start to happen. But, you know, I'm just a little bit behind with getting the segmentation and those communications out, and, you know, Miranda on the calendar. I haven't seen Miranda since March. So it's a little behind. So just thought I'd share that.
Okay. So putting it in context so I can understand, where are you on percentage basis?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've already, you know, call it earmarked the clients I want us to migrate. And we talked weeks ago, and my manager, Bob, I'm not sure if Bob's on the line, but he had asked, you know, practically speaking, it seems like a lot of these clients we want to offload aren't just an easy send it to the call center. You know, I guess over the years, it's gotten harder and harder to just offload these clients. So, and there's no just knight in shining armor in our branch that, jumps out. Charles does have someone that I think I might be able to offload a good amount of these in his office. But so I've got people earmarked, just haven't executed, you know, consolidating yet. And I've already started to have conversations with clients on getting into the cycle, but but you know, if I were putting percentage, I mean, I'm still well below 30% on that. Probably more like 20%. So,
but you've got some signed up. The most important point is to have, having got comfortable with the speech, having some people signed up and scheduled and start working. Now, I would typically say, and working with your folders, okay? But I don't know where you guys are without the office and without all that.
Right.
So, but we're starting September. You should have the sense of, this is the beginning. You know,
yeah,
this is the beginning. So I need to be looking at my schedule, seeing who I'm calling this month. And being prepared, you know, a week ahead, we get the agenda, send it out, make the call, send out the executive summary. It's not bad to do it with 20% because then you can, you know, if you did it with 100% right now, you might say, Rob, I'm going to kill myself, right?
Right. Okay.
Too much. So you got to work your way into it because the first few calls are long. Typically, you think they're going to be, you know, this guy didn't even want me to call him and he kept me on for an hour, right? That will happen when they realize what you're doing. You're not selling them something. You're just talking about them.
Yeah.
And this is different, truly. I mean, even when we're selling a financial plan, we're still selling a financial plan. You know, we implement the plan. We're still selling a product that comes from the financial plan. But when we do 12-4-2, we really are just thinking about them. What should we be doing? What aren't we doing? You know, we don't really know all the time how that call is going to end up. We know that we're making it, but we don't have, okay, I'm calling you because you said you wanted a mortgage. You know, I'm just calling you.
Right.
Here's my agenda and here's the items that you added. But other than that, I don't know where this call's going to go. In the sense, you know what I mean? It's just, it could go anywhere. It's, you know, I'm thinking about refinancing my mortgage. I'm thinking about, you know, I've got some more money over at XYZ firm and I'm thinking about bringing it over just to keep it, get it all in one place. And so you'll get that a lot. In terms of people, when you're willing to make this commitment, people are willing to make a commitment back to you, basically to pay you for your time.
Yeah.
And so that's not a strange occurrence to have happen. And they will do more business because you'll think, you have time to think through their situation more. And, you know, we didn't get around to doing X, Y, and Z. Now we have time to do that. Let's get those 529 set up, you know, whatever.
Right. Okay.
So
now,
anybody else, how's the rest feeling on this subject?
Yeah. I'm in a much different situation than Stefan, just in the sense that I'm much newer in the business and I've got open slots. So it wasn't necessarily a need to fire people in order to create, in order to.
Space,
to
right.
But there are certainly people still in that I currently have that going forward aren't going to fit into our model, you know. I'll be honest, I've been somewhat hesitant to offload those as well.
How about the signing up your clients? What percent do you have signed up?
Signed up for the 12-4-2?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say only about 20%.
Now, what would you say is your reasoning for only having 20%?
I think to some degree, just wrapping my head around the process and being a little intimidated to put this out to everybody, before I fully, I guess committed to it. I mean, just to be frank with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. But make sure you signed up enough that you get a you get an accurate test of the system. Basically, what you're saying is, look, I got to test the system first.
Right.
If you should have at least say 20 or 30 clients signed up.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you can get an accurate. You get accurate feedback as to what it's a decent sample.
Sure.
What I'm saying. Make sure you have a decent sample size.
Yeah.
That you can, because look, everybody is the same. You know, you all go through this. We call it curiosity, interest, knowledge, belief, enthusiasm. You don't get to enthusiasm until you pass the other stages.
Yeah.
So you're curious, you have enough interest to read the book, interest, knowledge, you're getting some knowledge by reading the book and signing up for training, curiosity, interest, knowledge, belief. Once you've gone and you've tested it, now you get to the belief stage when the clients say, this is great, and sends you more money because of it. That's when you go, wow, this works. And then you become enthusiastic and are willing to tell other people about it.
Sure.
So, but you got to keep pushing yourself, and know what stage you're in and what it's going to take to get you to the next stage.
Right.
So we used to teach this course in 3 months and we'd wait till the end and then everybody would sign up. They would all start at the end of 3 months. And the problem was they didn't get any positive feedback during that training period. So they're always questioning whether the process would work. So we said, no, that's crazy. So now we went to obviously signing people up week two. You know, we want you to sign up as soon as possible so you get that positive feedback loop. You know, you're doing something nice for them, they do something nice for you, and everybody becomes happy. So, but you got to have enough, as I say, enough to make it an accurate sample.
Right. Yeah. And I'll also just give you a little report. Charles wasn't able to join us today, but I think he's probably done the best of us. He has unloaded all of the people he's going to unload. So he's down to 60 clients and about 15 butlers.
So how many, give me those numbers again, you cut out.
60 clients.
Yep.
And 15 butlers.
Perfect.
And he has, and then obviously he has a few open slots. But he felt like there were people that needed, that weren't going to fit into the system. So he went ahead and already got rid of, or moved them on.
So Charles isn't here, but he gets an A+.
That's right. Exactly. It's probably pretty typical. That's pretty.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Charles. We expect out of him.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
That's what you want from the guy that's going to manage the money, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You want him very conscientious.
That's why he's our director of implementation. That's for sure.
Oh, that's good. Well, he should start to get some good stories because if he's all done, he's going to get a lot of feedback quite quickly, which will be
good.
Anyway.
Rob, while we're talking about butlers,
yeah.
So, you know, I know we've talked in the past, you know, the dear old lady I started my career with, you know, sat next to me, you know, 20 years ago. I'm never going to kick her to the curb or there's situations, obviously, children of great clients. But I'm kind of running into a lot more one-offs than I want to, or at least can you tell me it's okay? Great example. You know, I've got a couple great partners at big law firms that are in their early 40s or late 30s that, you know, they're just trying to get through kids in the beginning of their income earning years. But I mean, they're making a lot of money. They're going to be the people that are in charge of big decisions for big law firms later. I mean, are you okay with me keeping those sorts? And then my question is, am I categorizing them as butlers, if so, or do I go full born to like the 1242 if they've only got $100,000 or $200,000 with me in the near term?
Do you guys ever trade accounts back and forth between each other?
When you say trade, not really, but I mean, communication, I'm comfortable, you know, having Tyler or Charles talk to any of these people if that's what you're asking.
Who's the person that brings in most of the money to your team?
Probably me.
Okay. So wouldn't it make more sense to have, somebody else call those clients?
I guess so, for sure. I mean, in those, the partner law firm example, I mean, they're also, you know, friends, good friends of mine. So I don't know if that changes things where I need to remain the lead or makes it easier to transition or whatever, but.
I mean, the law of all places that would understand this, it would be a law firm.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. One partner is billing at $1,000 an hour and the other one is billing at $250 an hour.
Right.
Right. So it's just a matter of economics. I'm sorry.
So if I transition some of these, would you recommend transition into the butler or the full contact?
Yeah, I'd keep them. I mean, how much money do they have?
Like I said, a couple $100,000 each, but they're making, you know, $600,000-$700,000 a year.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be.
They're an incubation case.
Yeah.
You're incubating them until they become qualified clients. And I'd tell them that. I'd say, look, you know, you're treated like a client. And what we're going to do is call you quarterly. And once a year, we're going to sit down and go through your financial plan. Now that's no less than what everybody else in the street does.
Right.
Okay. If they'd be delighted with that. What you don't want to do is never call them.
Right.
Because then when they get their money, they're like, I'm going to go to a real financial advisor. So quarterly, yeah, we had a CEO of a company that opened an account with a couple $100,000. We made him a butler, but we went to see him twice a year. And sat down with him, and he deposited $23 million. You know, we knew it was coming, but we didn't have much to talk about monthly. So we just treated him like a butler until the money came in. But we made sure we saw him. So with a case like that, you want to see him twice a year.
So these guys, you know, let's just stick with this example. They'd also be good COIs. So, I mean, would you recommend?
Depend on how good they are as centers of influence. If I thought somebody can refer somebody to me every other month, heck yeah, I'm going to do a 1242.
Okay.
Because now I'm if he was a COI, I'd be calling him every month. So this way. I upgrade him to 1242 as a courtesy to him, but half the calls are about sharing business ideas and sharing business.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So Rob, do butlers know about 12-4-2? I mean, are you telling them, all right, once you are out of the, butlers, you know, once you reach this certain amount of money, we are going to transition you to our, our 12-4-2. Yeah,
it just becomes a matter of need, right? I think everybody deserves a financial plan.
Right.
But we don't, there's not, somebody with $10 million, you really need to talk to them every month. Okay, there's a lot going on in that agenda. Somebody with $200,000 that's depositing, $50,000 a year, there's not much going on, but it's a butler. It's a great butler opportunity. So unless they're a center of influence, I would forewarn them. But if they're going to, they're kind of an incubation. They're kind of a prospect, right? When you think about it, they're a prospect. And you're gonna keep in touch with them quarterly and see them once a year and do a financial plan. And if they can give you an introduction every year, that's great. But if they're a true center of influence, meaning we can really work together and they can send me a $10 million client, then I'm going to want to see them. Even with your 12-4-2s, the reality is you're probably not going to make, it won't be 12-4-2 at the end of the year. And you can track this. It's going to be closer to 8-4-2. They're going to be on vacation and you're going to be on vacation. Or you've got a called out for a meeting and you talk to them and they say, there's nothing really big today. Go ahead, skip me this month. Or you have your partner call them. So don't get hung up on the fact that you have to be perfect with 12-4-2. The fact that you are intending to do 12-4-2 is the most important thing. That doesn't mean you're slovenly with it at all. It just means when they call and say, look, I'm on vacation, I prefer not to get the call. You say, is there anything on your mind or anything pending? Because we don't have a lot right now. And they say, yeah, nothing. Why don't we just push it off to next month? You push it off to next month. That's fine. I've done that. Or you make the call real short because they're busy, right? Sometimes you'll pick them up and the guy goes, I'd love to spend time with you, but I got a call at 2:25. And so can we make this 10 minutes today? And you go, sure. Let's cut to the work, right? Cut to the recommendations. Boom, 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 boom. And they go, okay, good. Thanks. Bye. So at this point, you don't see it becomes, you'll get a sense that it becomes a little bit overwhelming when you get 100 people signed up for 12-4-2. You're going to be like, oh God, this is hard, but you'll get used to it. It becomes practical and you use it like any other professional CPA, attorney, dentist. They don't even think about it. They just do it and they stick to it. But if there's an emergency, they get an emergency. You reschedule or you bump it, out. It's not like surgery, unless you've got a lot to do, a lot of these clients are set, right? You don't need to do an awful lot. These are fast markets and things change, but, unless they're very active, there's probably not a lot to do. Okay. That should help a little bit with this. So practically speaking, I think you should have some incubators. If you had the junior partners of the law firm and frankly, Tyler was taking care of them, that's a great thing. But I hate to have you, Stefan, if you're the money finder, unless these guys are centers of influence, I don't want you spending time with them.
Okay. Yep.
Anytime. Right? Because everything costs money. Every minute you're on, not doing what most constructively you can be doing will make a difference.
Okay.
Good questions. Those are sort of the practical. What's the real practical side of Supernova? I don't want you to be slovenly about it at all. I don't want to imply that. But I think there's a practical side to running your business and not, you know, I don't want you to give up opportunities, but I don't want you wasting time. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
What else?
One other thing, as I'm kind of layering clients into the calendar, is there anything, any psychological reason why, like, maybe I would want to have the largest clients on a calendar year schedule, like January for review versus like a February or March? Do I need to think about that as I'm doing it or not?
I don't think so at all.
Okay.
I want to know how I'm doing all the time, right?
Yeah.
As a guy that's kind of managing, you know, different pots of money, I want to know how my different pots of money are doing. And I don't care. I mean, it is kind of interesting that we somehow have this calendar year thing, right?
Yeah.
But it really doesn't affect them or us. Who does the calendar year affect? It affects money managers, right? Because they get their bonus based on how they do, based on the calendar year. Well, that doesn't affect us. We don't get paid different if we end the year here or there. And I think it distorts performance where people are up. Oh, it's November and I'm up. I'm going to cash, you know, or.
Right.
I hit my bogey, so I'm gonna go to 20-30% cash because I hit my bogey.
Yeah. So
we don't hit a bogey. We're not getting paid more based on how we do. We don't get 1 in 20, or you know, 1 in 20% of the profits. So we don't care how the year ends. You know, so if it ends in November or October, we, you know, our year is ending every month, right? We get paid every month on how we do. So you want it to be as good as it can be without, you know, taking any more risks. So I think if you can get your clients away from the calendar year performance thing, it helps.
Okay.
So no, I don't.
Okay, good. Thanks.
I don't care. Yeah. My reviews are not any bigger. It's so weird. My review is, I don't have like a big review. There's no year end review for me ever. There's not a quarterly review really. It's what do we need to do this month in order to, you know, achieve whatever we're trying to achieve. So we have a meaningful conversation every month. But it's based on the agenda and the things that are important. It isn't based on performance. Performance is a part of it. I want to know how I'm doing. But it's just a part of it. It's about 25% maybe 20% of what we talk about. Okay?
Okay.
So, yeah, it just becomes less as the client, you know, as the client becomes more used to the process. What else? Anything else stick from the video or anything?
Unless Tyler has something, I'll ask. Sorry, I'm asking those questions. This last video kind of prompted this in my head. You know, you mapped out the 24-month calendar. And, you know, I can see new business coming out of just focusing on those campaigns. I totally get that. I'm just curious when you're talking about you know, doubling your business through the program. I mean, what percentage is it from these side campaigns on mortgages and long-term care versus just the sheer nature of you're more referable, your clients trust you, and then over time it comes that way? I mean, just out of curiosity.
It's a good question. I always use the calculation. Your business will increase 30%, because you're doing a better job of handling your clients. Okay. Your performance will be better because you're paying more attention to it. You'll make fewer mistakes in terms of leaving people out or not calling them and then having them underperform. People will send you money, because you're doing more for them. You'll do more products and services, and that really depends on you and psychologically how you see yourself. Some people really see themselves as risk managers and are willing to take the effort to sell the client life insurance and long-term care and other things. We don't sell disability, but you want to make sure you do a disability review and make sure the client understands how much they should have. So when you do those things, it's a chance to refer somebody else to them, somebody that does sell, for example, disability. But those people that really make an effort to sell products that, you know, they're comfortable with, mortgages and lines of credit, I mean, they do great. They'll be up 50% because they're just doing a lot that they didn't have time for. And they batch process it so they can execute it more succinctly. Whereas, you know, you do a financial plan and you do a life insurance policy, that's one life insurance policy or one mortgage or one long-term care policy. That's a horrible experience because you just get bogged down in all the minutia and all the stuff you don't remember. But if you do preparation and you plan on it and you learn about where long-term care is now, what's available, what's the cost-benefit analysis, and then you call everybody and talk to everybody about it, whether they need it or not, just informing them and educating them on long-term care and why it's available, then you'll have 10 people that you sell long-term care to. And that execution of those 10 policies really goes smoothly because it's 10, not one. So you get good at it. You just do it. And so you get good. You get much better at it. So, like I said, those that truly fully implement the plan do better than those that just do what they used to do. So 1242 won't deeply penetrate the client unless you do, right? So you've got to make up your mind, you know, are these products and services something I want to sell, or I'm allowed somebody else away from me to sell those and get the credit and get the revenues from it. And it's just, you know, some people see themselves as money managers and others see themselves as risk managers. Others see themselves as holistic financial partners with their clients, you know, and that's just, you know, it is, you know, however you see it. Now, the other 70% of the doubling comes from growth, comes from you becoming more referable. But actively, I was just writing, I'm going to do a webinar with Bill Cates, or a Zoom call. And, you know, I'm making up questions to ask myself, right? Bill and I are going to ask each other questions. So we write out our own questions. And one of the questions is, how do you think acquisition has changed in the new world? And I go through answers to that, and why it's changed. What do you think separates the best from the rest in terms of acquisition? You know, what separates the best teams from the rest? And then, you've been you've been working with Bill Cates' referral model for years. Why do you think some teams do so well with it and others don't? Well, I use the analogy of playing tennis. I said people go into a new acquisition strategy as if they were going to play tennis for the first time. And they pick up a racket and they hit some balls and they get frustrated and they quit. All right. Versus somebody that's really serious about playing tennis, picks up a racket, goes and takes lessons, practices in between the lessons, takes more lessons, goes out and plays, takes another lesson, practices, plays, and guess what? 6 months, they're a decent tennis player, right? Why? Because they practiced, because they learned from a professional and they took it seriously. The other guy they thought that tennis would just happen for them. You know, I'm a good athlete, so I can just pick up a racket and play. Well, most financial advisors look at Bill Cates' model, his referral model, and think, oh, that looks easy. I'll just do it. And they try it, and it doesn't work, and they get frustrated, and they get embarrassed, and so they quit, right? And pretend they're too busy to use it. And that's the answer. They need to practice. They need to learn from a professional so they can talk to me or talk to Bill Cates. And you need to practice, and then you need to try it out, and then you need to practice, and then you need to talk to a professional, and then you need to try it out, and so forth. And you can't expect it to go well until you've been doing it for maybe 3 months. And the average person will try it out once or twice. And it doesn't work, they stop doing it. So think about that when introducing any new acquisition strategy to yourself. So, the real serious person wants to know exactly what to say. Exactly. And they get the most powerful words lined up in the most powerful sequence so they get the right result. You can't be casual about your business. This is your Olympics. This is your profession. This is your tennis. But it isn't just a casual game. You're a professional tennis player. You're a professional financial advisor. Every part of your business should be really scripted. Every part of it. And that's how you get your team really rocking and rolling. The question is, what is the difference between a great team and an average team? Well, a great team, they're really well organized. They know their roles and responsibilities. They hold themselves and others accountable through regularly scheduled appointments with each other, right? Regularly scheduled meetings. They prepare by practicing presentations. They know their script and they use powerful words.
Yeah, Rob, I think it's really, just to interject, when I hear you say that's what a great team is, other than a couple of those, historically we have not done that. You know, we are not as organized as we should have been. We are not, a lot of those things, our roles haven't been as clearly defined as they should have been. And so, I just find that very interesting that as you run through that list, and I think this is a big step right here. Yeah. I've got that on my bookcase as well. So,
everybody see that?
That's right.
You are a good team.
Not great yet. We're working on it.
Well, you've signed up for this. Okay. So you've done the first step, and you've done other steps in the past, I'm sure. But this is a really important step, because I can teach you how to be a great team, but you've got to do the work. Okay. Just, you got to say, okay, what would it take to get my CFP for planning? You probably have them. It took a lot of work. They don't hand you that. This is a CFP for service and growth. Okay. So we don't hand out a certificate, but we should.
I'm having flashbacks from studying for the CFP. I don't like the sound of that.
Me as well.
Hey, Rob, speaking of scripts, I think it's your coffee group that you mentioned in Florida, all these guys that really don't have plans. They've got the assets. They'd be great clients. I probably have a lot of that sort of scenario with some of my network and centers of influence and circles I'm swimming in, where it's almost like uncomfortable to kind of just be the guy that's real pushy and, you know, asking for the business. But to your point, I at least need to give it a shot, you know, in a lot of situations where I'm just kind of trying to naturally let it evolve. And just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, okay, well, if you were back in the day when you were an advisor, similar situation with these people that, you know, you're around, you're friendly with, how would you position yourself and what would you do?
You tell stories. You tell stories, and they can be close to the truth or they could be slightly made up. But the basic point is that you want to tell stories that make people take their lives seriously, right? I mean, they don't take it seriously. They're complete amateurs, and they think it's okay. And they miss, they may not get killed, but they make really bad decisions and they miss huge opportunities because they don't know how to manage their money. And so you tell them about people that retire with no money, that worked hard and just spent too much. Or they, you know, just, you know, stories. What do people that are screwed up do? They end up making investments. I've got good friends that were in my position that made investments after they retired in private equity deals, in just venture capital stuff. They had no business doing, and they lost their money. And now they have to work at 74 or 5. And they had it. They just didn't, and they were in our business. Talk about being dumb. Where people look at American Greed every day. You can watch American Greed and they'll have another story of reasonably hardworking, smart, reasonably smart people handing over their money to crooks. So when you say, well, I don't want to feel pushy, you're going to save these guys.
Yeah.
You got to think, do I throw them a life preserver or am I too shy to throw them a life preserver? I think you should throw them a life preserver. If they don't want to catch the life preserver, that's their problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, to say, hey, I'm putting together an educational group for a bunch of buddies of mine, and we're going to just talk about investing in fast markets in these crazy world. You want to join? Yeah, I'd love to join. And then you just teach them how to run a practice, teach them how to run their money. And pretty soon they're all going to go, here, get, here it is. I want you to run it. And let them talk about crazy stocks and all the rest of it. You don't have to be always the guy given all the wisdom, but just kind of say, hey, here's how a portfolio should work. This isn't just a bunch of stocks. This is a portfolio, you know, asset allocation, large cap, small cap. We're going to take advantage of all these markets, but we don't have to buy Zoom. We just have to buy, you know, good companies that are going to grow. If we asset allocate properly, we'll pick up a reasonable amount of those things. I mean, hell, the S&P 500 picks up a bunch of that. So, you know, you can be very helpful to them. Or you can just say, you know, let's have lunch sometime and talk about, we've never really talked about your situation. If you'd like, these are crazy markets. People are really uncertain as to what to do. I'd be happy to spend a little time and go through your situation. You know, it used to happen to me all the time. My wife would tell me that such and such is going to call you. His wife approached me and said, Johnny, John is all screwed up. He won't call Rob. Will Rob please call him? He really needs help. And so I'd call him and then everything would be fine. We'd fix him, right? But the guys are just kind of like, they're shy. I don't know. He's, you know, you're too big for me. You're too busy. You're too this, you know. They make up crap.
Yeah.
Just like you do about them.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, you know, I had my masseuse say, you know, she was selling her farm and she's going to need some advice. And I said, how much is it? I'm expecting, you know, 1.2 million or 5 million. And she said, oh, it's 120,000. We're going to split it three ways. Right. So, you know, what can I do for her? Right. I can just tell her when it happens. I'll show you a few things to do, you know, how not to waste it because she's got a daughter and she wants to educate her, but I'm not going to refer her. I'm just going to, you know, tell her to buy the S&P 500 and.
Yeah. You know.
So anyway, so you got to qualify them, but, you know how to do that, but people are really curious. It's a wonderful time to be in our business and people know they need us because half of them are still in cash because they panicked and sold. It's a lot of that going on. And if they don't have a coach or they don't have a counselor, they're doing just really dumb things. All right. So the 24-month calendar, one of the best practices out of the 24-month calendar is develop a 24-month calendar for your marketing initiative. Don't worry about that it's not going to be full. Okay. Just embrace the idea of it. If we're really organized marketing-wise, what would we be doing? Okay. So the 24-month calendar you recognize will generate business. The 24-month marketing calendar will represent some growth, new business, but it gets you organized. Okay. I got to run.
Okay.
Thank you all. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for all the questions. It makes it much more interesting for me.
Of course. Have a good holiday weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Bye bye. See ya. Bye bye.